Welcome everybody to the last regular season of NFL football and Gridiron Wrap on WJR 760, our great voice of the Great Lakes, and never disappoints, Alex. Just a lot of intrigue and drama, and you know, on the collegiate level and certainly on the NFL level. And I mean, you know, what's obviously logically first and foremost on most of the minds in our area is the Lions game, and you know, they're just going into Chicago and so far dominating. And you know, there's two thoughts, strong thoughts I have on that game. It reminds me so far of how the Lions played at San Francisco in the championship game 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And I know Fox brought up what Dan Campbell said after the game about how hard it is to get back to that point, and that they may never get back to that point. But I just saw the Lions just play so well in the first half of this game. And, you know, the Lions led the 49ers, I think, by 17 at halftime of the championship game. And if Jake Bates makes that field goal that he, you know, has made the majority of this year, it would have been a 16-point lead. But yeah, very similar feel for me. And the other thing is just you can never measure the human spirit, the human will, the power of a group of men working together, believing together, trying to accomplish something together. And as I say that, the Lions just intercepted pass in the end zone to thwart a Bears drive. So it remains 13-0.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a testament to the human factor when it comes to the NFL.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, coming into this game, I almost wanted the Lions to lose a little bit just for the draft pick. But now, honestly, the more I watch this game, I really think it would be good just to end the season on a positive note, right? Because it didn't go the way this team and franchise wanted it to go heading into the year, obviously missing the playoffs. But with the Vikings getting the win earlier today and locking in that number four schedule, like we talked about last week on the show, right, that's just so important. And I mean, going to be very helpful for the Lions next year. I think ending the season on a high note and then going into a long off season would be very good. And they, I mean, the Lions have just looked great today. They look like a little like the team we're used to watching and the team we saw last year. I mean, Amon Ra's having one of his best games of the season. Doesn't have a touchdown yet, but has 9 receptions for 110 yards. Gibbs has looked great, and they've been able to do a good job getting him the ball in the passing game as well as the run game. Goff's been playing well, especially in cold weather, which we know he's had things. And you have Hutch hit a great sack and has had some great pressures today. Just an all-around great game. And, yeah, it's a nice intrigue, and hopefully they can end the season on a high note here.
Well, the other thing that strikes me about the performance, at least so far, is, you know, the coaching staff should take a lot of responsibility for the performance so far. Because where the players are in a game like this is everywhere. They're all professionals. They all know that the team today is the last time it will be together. And there'll be a dramatic, I think the turnover ratio in the NFL is usually around 30% or so. So, you know, a number of players, a number of starters aren't going to be back. But the young guys, they know that they're trying to prove that they deserve to be back, or they're putting their resume on tape, on film for another team. But I think hats off to the coaching staff as well for getting the Lions, you know, prepared, because, you know, the mental aspect of going into a game like this, when you realize that, you know, everything that the Lions needed to happen 2 weeks ago before the elimination game on Christmas Day happened. It's happened. And that can be either frustrating or motivating. And the Lions have done a good job of using it to their advantage as a motivational tool, perhaps. But yeah, you know, they're playing well. And I think that really speaks highly of Dan and his staff, in addition to the just mental fortitude and commitment to being a professional that all these players have.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is one of the things why you bring in Dan Campbell for days like this, because he's such a good motivator and leader of men like that. And then you also have to wonder with Chicago as well. I mean, they're going to be playing next week, so it probably is a little bit harder for them and their players to really be focused on the game. That I mean, they're just playing for the 2 or 3 seed here, right? So they know they're either going to get Green Bay or LA next week, and so it might just be a little harder, especially to play a team with all their starters out here today, which not a lot of teams around the league in this window right now do have all their starters out, but the Lions do, and they're playing hard. So just interesting kind of plot line and storyline from the human aspect of the game, and the Lions are doing a great job rising to the occasion.
Yeah, they really are. And I suppose it would be appropriate to take a look at some of the other games today, some of interest, certainly. And you speak about, the human heart and fortitude. You know, the Colts went into Houston today and battled the Texans down to the last minute. And was it Riley Leonard, the quarterback?
Yep.
The rookie started the game for the Colts and scored 30 points against the top defense in the NFL.
Yeah.
There were some comments this week about, players looking for him, to start. And I think the team was generally excited about seeing what may be their future. And, so the Colts went into Houston and played very well, even though the Texans came away with a win. The game I worked, the Giants rolled over the Cowboys, and I was talking to some team personnel before the game started, and man, for like it seemed decades, when the Giants and Cowboys were playing, it was always a 4 o'clock game, or a night game, or a prime game, and it was Madden and Summerall, or Jim Nance or Joe Buck, or, it's just fascinating how up and down the league is. But the Giants look good today. They, their young guys played hard and came away with a win. Speaking of playing hard, the Browns defense played hard again, as it has all year. Credit to Jim Schwartz and they beat the Browns on a last second field goal, 49-yard field goal, I think it was, 20-18 in Cincinnati, and Myles Garrett set the sack record. And if anybody watched the end of that game, you would understand that, yeah, these are men, these are professionals, they're making a ton of money. Yeah, we get all that. But the human aspect of it is still very real. I mean, they carried the kicker off the field on their shoulders like they had won the Super Bowl. The bench went crazy. They had Myles Garrett perched on their shoulders for the sack record. And you gotta love that. It's just wonderful, I think, when you see that kind of, professionalism, whatever you want to call it. It's real.
Love of the game. It's genuine. Yeah, no, it was super fun to watch. Having it on earlier today, like you said, Browns were out of it. They're, weren't really playing for a ton on paper, but yeah, they were all having fun. They were playing with Myles Garrett. I mean, it might be the last game of the Kevin Stefanski era in Cleveland, but I wouldn't be surprised. He's a guy, he's probably gonna get another head coaching job in a few years, right? He does a good job schematically. Clear, the team's never quit on him, even when they've been out of the playoff races the past few years. The job with Flacco is great. So really interesting to see where that franchise will go, and especially with their head coaching search in the future. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see down the line, but great game of the early window.
Yeah. I mean, it's the state of Ohio championship, if you will. And really kudos to the Browns for playing that hard and winning in the fashion which they did as well. And just an update on the Lions game. The Lions offense is driving inside the 10-yard line. And so far, it's still playing out the way it did in the first half. So pretty darn impressive. Another game that had significant implications as far as playoffs go, the Falcons beat the Saints 19-17. Kirk Cousins leads the Falcons to a victory. And with that win by Atlanta, Carolina clinches a playoff spot. How about
wild.
That? It's wild. and you never know, you know, mm-hmm. as crazy as it sounds, you just never know. But the Saints had a nice role at the end of the season. Tyler Shuck looks like, you know, the Saints found a quarterback, you know, for the future.
When he drafted a 26-year-old rookie, they better be pro ready. But he was. That's right. He was. So
yeah. And it just, you know, you got to be happy for the Saints and how they've, you know, turned their season around. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that game and some others when we come back on Gridiron Wrap. You're listening to 760 WJR, the Great Lakes of the great voice of the Great Lakes. Welcome back, everyone, to Gridiron Wrap. Lions have a first and goal, second and goal against the Bears, still leading 13-0. And to wrap up the scores from earlier today, we mentioned Kellen Moore and the Saints, you know, really giving Atlanta a battle until falling at the end. As we talked about earlier, although it would have been different because the Packers wouldn't have been playing, I forget his name at quarterback today. But the Vikings handled the Packers 16-3. J.J. McCarthy, I guess, started out well and then got hurt again.
Yeah, he had an injury in his throwing hand that kind of re-aggravated on one pass. But, I mean, the Packers weren't even playing Malik Willis. They were playing their third-string quarterback in Clayton Toon. So he only threw the ball 11 times for 34 yards today. They were mostly running it. I think they ran it 35 times today compared to 11 passes and ended up getting a field goal literally as time expired just to avoid the, you know, kind of moral embarrassment of the shutout. So, again, the Packers weren't really taken seriously. They're locked into the seven seed no matter what. So I mean, this game had a big effect on the Lions, though, with the Lions guaranteeing that fourth divisional spot for the roster or schedule draw next year.
No questions at all. I think the Packers were playing as if almost this was a bye week for them. They're just getting ready for the playoffs, and that was their focus and that was their approach, and you know, good for them. The Jaguars just keep rolling. I mean, they, you know, it was kind of close early and then they just pull away from the Titans, 41-7. And, you know, Liam Cohen's got to be up for coach of the year with the job he's done. I mean, just remarkable in so many ways to, take that franchise to where it is on the, and they're playing as well as anybody right now. And, you know, like we've heard every year with the playoffs around the corner, it's how you're playing in December and January, not how you start the season, how you're playing in December and January. So, you know, a lot to be seen there. Some of the games that are currently ongoing. How about this one? The Cardinals just scored a touchdown, are about to go up 20-16 on the Rams. And the Rams had a 16-6 lead. It was a fourth down earlier in the third quarter. And you know, the special teams troubles the Rams have had this year. They actually changed coaches a couple weeks ago, dismissed their special teams coach and appointed someone from the staff. Well, it was 16-6. Cardinals were punting. The Rams seemed to be in control. Fake punt. They threw a pass down the seam to one of the personal protectors for about 30 yards or so. And then they're now leading. They went ahead. You know, and that's a game the Rams do not want to lose. They want to win that game for just, you know, just the confidence factor. You know, 3 weeks ago, they were the number one seed going into the playoffs, and they were rolling. And you look at how they played at Seattle. I mean, there were a couple fluke things that happened that cost them the game, but not offensively. You know, the offense was great. They've been sputtering the last couple weeks. So we'll see. We'll see what happens the rest of that game. In the AFC West battle, the Broncos lead the Chargers 13-3. Denver's on its way to the number one seed in the AFC. Mm-hmm. And you can't, you know, Sean Payton's a Hall of Fame coach, obviously. Yeah. And what he's done over the years is remarkable. Mm-hmm. Chiefs and the Raiders are tied at 6 in the third quarter. Patriots continue to roll. Mike Vrabel is another guy you got to consider for coach of the year. They're beating the Dolphins 24-10. The Eagles are resting a lot of guys today, and they're beating the Commanders 14-10 in Philadelphia in a game that will be remembered less for the score and more for the sort of the nostalgia aspect of it. The final game at Rich Stadium. I'm not sure what's even called now.
It's Highmark currently.
Yeah, but you know, Buffalo says goodbye to its home since 1970. And you know, any stadium that's around for as long as that one has been is going to have a ton of memories. Mm-hmm. But there's something so unique about the Buffalo fans, the outdoor venue, you know, so many games, the, you know, the four straight Super Bowls. I mean, you could go on and on and on. The greatest comeback in playoff history when Frank Reich brought the Bills back against the Houston Oilers back then. Mm-hmm. Warren Moon and the Houston Oilers. But the Bills are sending, they appear to be in great control with this swan song, if you will, leading the Jets 29-0 in the third quarter. And the Jets may be on the side of a very dubious streak or record, rather. Mm-hmm. In this game, if they don't intercept a pass, their defense will be the first in, I think, NFL history.
Yeah, NFL history.
Not to have intercepted a pass during an entire season.
Yeah, well, 107 season, I think, of NFL football. Yeah. This is, and then the first one. Yeah, not very surprising. I guess it's a little bit scheme driven with how much Aaron Glenn likes to run man. You don't have as many players playing with their eyes on the quarterback rather than back turned towards it. But mm-hmm. I mean, that's such a Jets stat, right? To never have one tip pass go to a linebacker, never anything good like that happen. No. Yeah, very dubious, but happy for Buffalo to give the Ralph the send off it deserves. But also, and not to you know, get too into this, but I'm so happy the Bills are building another outdoor stadium. Yeah. Me personally, I believe football is a game that mm-hmm. is at its best when it's played outside and in the elements. And it's made me a little sad with all the indoor stadiums that have been announced recently with some of these teams like Cleveland, Chicago, and Kansas City. I get why they do it. I get the mm-hmm. you know, the economics behind all that. Mm-hmm. Just from the purist in me, I love watching the outdoor games. So I'm super glad that the Bills are going to continue to play some awesome snow games going forward.
Well, I agree with you. And I think not only is it what we grew up with when it comes mm-hmm. to football and the NFL and college, but there are some pretty significant statistics that bear out teams that play in the elements have a very decided home field advantage compared to teams that don't. I'd love to talk more about that when we get back from this break on Gridiron Wrap. You're listening to 760 WJR, the great voice of the Great Lakes. Welcome back to Gridiron Wrap. And Lions lead the Bears 16-0 now at the start of the fourth quarter. The Bears are inside Lions territory, inside the 35, but there's a penalty flag down, so we'll see what that's all about. But we were talking before the break, Alex, about you know, the new Buffalo Stadium going to be outdoors. And, you know, back when we were considering, when I was with the Lions and we were considering a new stadium, which became Ford Field, and we had been at the Silverdome. And back in that era, I did some research because I grew up in Pittsburgh, open air stadium, Three Rivers, worked for the Washington Redskins, RFK Stadium, open air stadium. And, you know, it's not the case today, but back in the, you know, late 90s when we were developing ideas for the new stadium, the top seven NFL franchises as far as home field advantage went. We're all outdoor stadiums. Hmm. And that's still the case today.
Really?
The top stadiums are, top home field advantages are outdoor stadiums, the elements. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I still believe that. I understand the economics of it. You know, the new Chicago stadium is supposed to be indoors. It's supposed to have a roof. And the economics are such that you have to use monies from other events to help, mm-hmm. you know, pay for it, basically, you know, and we can go round and round on the economics of all that.
Yeah.
But still, when you think about it, and the one example I always give is, why is the Super Bowl always played in pristine conditions? Because they want to level the playing field for both mm-hmm. teams. But when you take away that element, I think it has a factor on the game. And I mentioned it, you know, last year for the Lions playoff game against Washington. Washington's coming in here, and they had a very fast team. You know, the rookie quarterback, Jaden McDaniels, was made a ton of plays with his legs. You know, great receivers, great back seven. And I felt that potential advantage for the Lions was gone because of the surface. And there's a bunch of examples of that. You know, for years, Tampa Bay hadn't won a game that where the temperature was under 40 degrees. Mm-hmm. You know, for decades they hadn't won a game.
Yeah.
And
Miami's still awful outside, no matter what. They're always awful outside late in the year.
And the one thing, and an update, not a pleasant one necessarily, but Chicago finally did score and converted a 2-point play to cut the lead to one possession. Lions lead 16-8 now. But to me, it's not just the physical reality of playing outdoors, but I remember when we, you know, when I was with the team, both at the Silver Dome and at Ford Field, when we were going to Green Bay in December or January, Chicago, right? You know, the media was asking the players about it all week. Mm-hmm. And whether or not it had a discernible physical impact or not, it still was a factor because you're mm-hmm. getting reminded of it. You're constantly getting reminded of it. And I remember there were times at the Allen Park facility, if it was cold here, okay, during the week, we would run the fans all night long, literally, to bring in the cold air. So for practice, at least from a mental standpoint, I believe, the players felt like, okay, we're preparing for this.
Yeah.
So you replicated at least the temperature. But, you know, the one thing you can't replicate often is the surface of the field. Mm-hmm. And I think that's had an impact many times in some of these classic outdoor games. You know, I go back to the infamous playoff game at Green Bay where Barry had -1 yard mm-hmm. rushing. And I swear that, you know, the Packers watered that field that week
because
the grass was about this high and it was slow and sloppy. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That's home field advantage.
Yeah, you get to do it.
And there is no doubt in my mind that had an impact on our offense. You know, an offense that not only had Barry, but the Herman Moores and Brett Perrymans and Aubrey Matthews. And we were offensively, at least, built on speed. And mm-hmm. it got negated because of the surface. So, you know, kudos to the Bills for having that foresight. And I also believe, now Buffalo's unique. Buffalo's a lot like Green Bay or like Pittsburgh used to be, at least with the fans, where they get so psyched up being outside at tailgates. Mm-hmm. You know, by the time the ball is kicked off, they're ready to play.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of factors that go into it, but I agree with you. I think that was a good decision.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm pretty sure before they built the stadium, they actually sent out a poll to the season ticket holders, and they were overwhelmingly in favor of an outdoor stadium. But in some of the news stories and coverages I've been following as well, they have done some really cool things with the design of the stadium. It's built very high up, and it's kind of been designed to kind of minimize wind on the playing surface. So you almost get a little bit of the benefit of both, still being outside in the elements, but not having wind affect the kicking and all that. And then it's also taken a little bit of a page, not as extremism necessarily Hard Rock Stadium has, but taking having the audience be under more awnings and stuff and covered up that way, which I think is also very cool. Yep. So I think it's a very good hybrid way to go and blend the elements of the outdoor football while also making the fan experience, kind of purifying the game a little bit without it going too far. But yeah, I find all the kind of gamesmanship about the indoor outdoor stadium and the field conditions like that super interesting all around. And, hopefully some more NFL teams, kind of take note of this kind of cool hybrid design, because, if everything's inside, it gets a little too repetitive sometimes. So I really like it, but yeah, awesome job by the Bills to, design a cool stadium, and it's great that they're sending off Highmark today in a good
form. Yeah. I it's interesting. You mentioned, Hard Rock Stadium with the roof design. And it was probably in the early 2000s. I can't remember when, but it was shortly after we opened Ford Field. And I got a call from a columnist. I think he was with the Tampa Tribune, and their attendance in Tampa was suffering. And he just wanted to get some thoughts about stadium designs as they're at, or about attendance, I'm not sure what. So I said, well, I'll tell you what the first thing I would do without question, because, we played down in Tampa every year for years when we were in the old NFC Central, with the five teams. I said, I wouldn't enclose it, but I would put a roof on that sucker, because your fans, you just watch the early season games, it is so hot with those metal bleachers, people can't survive. Literally out there in that sun. I'm sure Miami, that was the logic behind their decision to do what they did. Home field advantage, sadly, although it used to be one of the great benefits of a home game, is not what it used to be. And a lot of that has to do with the fact of the secondary market of tickets. You can get tickets anywhere for any game at any time if you're willing to pay the price. And that's certainly how Lion fans have been able to travel so well over the past 2 years. And I heard something that was just heartbreaking, having grown up in Pittsburgh, that when the Packers played the Steelers earlier this year and beat them in Pittsburgh, there were more Packer fans there than Steeler fans, which is something I would have never believed years ago.
That is wild. But
I don't know if you've seen that on the collegiate level. I tend to hope not and think not, because
Happens sometimes. The most famous example, if you want to go really far back, and this is crazy because the secondary market wasn't even as big, but I believe it was either somewhere between 2000 and 2002, Nebraska went to Notre Dame Stadium. And if you look up the photos of it, one of the end zones is completely red. Nebraska is known for traveling super well in it. Notre Dame, that kind of happens to them more because they're such a national brand that it isn't as concentrated in Indiana. And it's such like a bucket list kind of destination for a lot of visiting fans that happens. But yeah, it does happen a lot more in college. I mean, when I went to Wrigley Field earlier this year for a Michigan Northwestern game, obviously special circumstances with it being at Wrigley and Chicago being such a hub for Michigan stadiums. But if you didn't have all those scoreboard graphics and announcements, you wouldn't have known it was technically a Northwestern home game. You would have thought Michigan moved it out there, because I bet it was 85% to 90% Michigan fans there that day.
Really?
Yeah, it got super loud whenever the Michigan defense was on the field, but when Northwestern was on the field, the Michigan offense had a really easy time communicating. So yeah, the secondary market certainly does have something to play about it, but fan base size and all that, I think, is just one of the bigger factors overall.
Yeah, speaking of taking over stadium, how about switching a little to the college game? How about Indiana fans at the Rose Bowl? That was, I can't find a word.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, when they showed the stadium after the game, when all the IU fans were staying for the award presentation, It was 3/4, 4/5 Indiana red, not Alabama red.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Indiana, I mean, they haven't been to the Rose Bowl that many times, no, ever, right? So true. For a lot of people, it's a bucket list thing. It's their best team ever. You're going to go do it. Where Alabama fans, you know, they're spoiled, just kind of put it pretty, you know, bluntly. They've been to so many national championships, many semifinals and big bowl games, where the Indiana fans are a little bit more willing to shell out the big bucks to make that trip out to Pasadena.
No question. And we'll talk a lot more about the college football playoffs in addition to wrapping up the day in the NFL when we come back on Gridiron Wrap. WJR 760, the great voice of the Great Lakes. Welcome back, everybody, to Gridiron Wrap. And one thing before we get into an update of the NFL games, Alex, and also refocus on the college playoffs, I wanted to mention some sad news today in the local sports community. Dave Gericke, who was the prep writer for the Detroit News forever, and he passed away after an illness. And I would advise everybody that's listening to take a look at Lynn Henning's article in the Detroit News today. I think Lynn's one of the best writers I've ever experienced in our community. He's retired or semi-retired because he's still working occasionally, but he wrote a beautiful tribute piece to Dave. And when you think about it, prep writers are so special, you know, and a lot of them, the majority of them that I've come to know, they remain in that beat forever because I think they realize the impact they can have on young people. And on a community, on a school district. And I'm literally getting goosebumps right now because I'm thinking of some of the prep writers I know, Mick McCabe and Dave. I knew Dave and my children that got covered. You know, Dave was a family man. He had triplet boys and from Coldwater, that part of the state, but truly a loss when you think about how many young people he impacted over the years. Can you even begin to fathom how many lives he touched, and undoubtedly for the better?
Yeah, it's high school reporting on high school football and local media is so important because it's one of the things where, in particular, not many forms of journalism, you're actually positively impacting people's lives, right? You might be informative and all that, but with high school football and covering it, you're literally changing the trajectory of kids' lives by highlighting these standout performances, you know, getting their name out there. Even in today, in the age of the internet, the local reporting is so important for a lot of these kids to get mentioned. Obviously, you know, your kid who's 6'8", 320, he's going to get noticed no matter what. But especially for people who go on to play at the, you know, group of four level, FCS, D2, D3, NAIA, these local reporters are one of the biggest factors for them getting recruited and getting that chance to play the game for more years. And, you know, maybe earn a scholarship doing it in the meantime. So really sad loss. But again, like you said, many lives touched and affected for the positive. So great to be lucky enough to have someone like that in the community and in the Detroit media sphere.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Alex, because we've been fortunate in Detroit because high school sports, youth sports are so important to the fabric of so many of our communities. And JR does a great job with the Friday night games, the Chris Renrick and the local high school broadcasting, you know, aspiring broadcaster, a student participate in, and with our sportscaster show. It's just beautiful, I think, when you think about the impact things like this have on the young people, our future, really. And Dave, you know, our deepest sympathy to Dave's family. But what a legacy he has left in this community. And like I said, the lives he's touched over the years, I can't even begin to estimate, because and when I say it could be millions, it could be millions when you think about it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure we mentioned that. And some other news that I Well, as we update you on the Lions Bears game, Caleb Williams is being Caleb Williams again. Mm-hmm. He's starting to look like Brock Purdy from a few years ago.
Yeah.
The Bears are now inside the five. There's 6 minutes to go in the game. It's a third and one, but the Lions still have that one possession lead, 16-8. So obviously if they score a touchdown here, they'd still have to convert a two point play here. And they got the first down. So there's a flag. So we'll see what happens. But anyways, we were talking about the college football playoffs and in particular, the attendance of IU fans. And, you know, I think there's two fabulous stories this year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously IU. I mean, can you even begin to imagine 3 years ago, 2 years ago, even last year,
mm-hmm.
that Frank Cignetti or Kirk Cignetti, I'm confused the father and the son, has his team where it is. It's incredible. And it's not a fluke.
No,
and
not
whatever
at all.
That secret sauce is, Skinny Butcher should bottle it and sell it.
Yeah, they should. Yeah. Definitely.
So let's go, Skinny Butcher. Let's bottle that.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing, Alex.
It really is. I mean, it's the greatest sports turnaround in America in my lifetime, I think.
Yeah.
And it's by far. I mean, they just dominate. Who would have ever been? Imagine telling someone 5 years ago that in the Rose Bowl, the Indiana Hoosiers would be the Alabama Crimson Tide by 35. Yeah. I believe it was the first 30-plus point loss for Alabama since 1998.
Right.
And for it to happen in the playoffs and in the Rose Bowl like that was just absurd. It was a complete beatdown. Mm-hmm. Indiana got 220 yards on the ground. And then Mendoza, I mean, he obviously earned the Heisman, but he went 14 for 16 with 192 mm-hmm. yards and three touchdowns. They're just mm-hmm. a machine. It's not just that they're fluking and, you know, they've had a bunch of, you know, one score wins or whatever throughout the year. I mean, they had a few close games, but they look unstoppable right now. And it's absurd. I think the only other story that rivals this in terms of unlikelihood is about a decade ago now, when Leicester City won the Premier League, despite being one of the team with the worst odds at the beginning of the year. So yeah, great young man. Yeah.
It's remarkable. And it speaks to so many things.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look at the culture Coach Cignetti has established there. Mm-hmm. And I always look for stuff like this. And, you know, over the years and in my current role with the NFL, the immediate reaction by players on the field to a play, to a penalty, to an injury, whatever it might be, to me are the most genuine and mm-hmm. the most real, if you will. You know, it's how the players react in that immediacy following a play. If they think there was interference, they're going to act a certain way. If a player's hurt, they're going to react a certain way. But when IU and Cignetti and all the key players were up on the stage after the game, and the offensive MVP went to the O-lineman, to an offensive mm-hmm. lineman, and to see how his teammates reacted, Mendoza at the top of the list, it was pure love and mm-hmm. joy. And I mean, they were ecstatic. And when you can create that on any team, and yeah, I said love because that's real, man.
Mm-hmm.
Those feelings they have for each other are real. And when you have a team that reacts that way, you know, there's no limit to how far they can climb or achieve. And that, You create that culture. It doesn't happen by accident. And Coach Cignetti has created that culture.
Yeah, and your point about creating that culture, one thing that's most amazing about it is Cignetti's so aggressive in the portal. If you look at that, he's not that big of a high school recruiter. I mean, this isn't a team, you know, like, for example, like the Ohio State team last year, the Michigan team from 2 years ago, that was those were both teams full of guys who were playing together for 3, 4, 5 years. So, and like, it's obvious when they have that, again, like you said, that love, that type of reaction to each other. But what Cignetti's doing in Indiana, most of these guys have played together 1 or 2 years outside of the James Madison holdovers, who he still has, who he brought over with him. So it really does just speak to the culture. And there are a lot of interesting things that he does differently. He does shorter practices with just kind of not padded as much, kind of a lighter in the week. He said, you know, we're going to coach stuff more in the film room. That's when we're going to do our walkthroughs, our preparation. Then when we're out in the practice field, we're just going to practice what we need to. He encourages his coaches to be efficient with their day. He talks about, you know, don't be performative and spend, you know, 12 hours in the facility when you can get all your work done in 8, right? To go home and spend more time with your family. So I think there's a lot of refreshing perspectives, and it's going to be interesting to see the ripple effects that his tenure or Indiana will have on the sport in the long run.
Yeah, and it will have an impact. I think sports in general, football perhaps in particular, it's a copycat reality at every level.
Yeah.
What's working? The key is, again, whatever his secret sauce is. What is his secret sauce? And, you know, players, coaches are all going to try to replicate it. And in the other story, in addition to IU, is Ole Miss and, and the fact that they're still playing ball.
Yeah.
And not only losing the head coach, Lane Kiffin, to a new job, but also, you know, the fact that they've got a Michigander at cornerback who was hosting the D2 trophy a year ago for Fair State. It's just fabulous. And it in a way, it's similar to what IU has done. Just the power of the human spirit and belief in yourself and in team. And it's incredible when you watch that Ole Miss game against Georgia, who I think prior to the quarterfinals had to be probably one of the favorites.
Yeah, Georgia was just rolling. They did a great job against Alabama in the SEC championship game. But Ole Miss, Trinidad Chambliss played great, but Pete Golding's also been doing an amazing job from the coaching perspective. He got hired and made full-time, not interim immediately, and he's done a good job balancing the delicate situation of the offensive staff, most of them being employed by LSU. And then he's also, I've read, called in some favors in the coaching community, getting guys like the Stoops brothers and Rick Neuheisel in to help kind of run the practices. So he's done a great job in a challenging time. So I'm happy Ole Miss is moving on. They're doing a good job in a difficult situation.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the college football semifinals coming up when we come back on Gridiron Wrap. You're listening to 760 WJR, the great voice of the Great Lakes. Welcome back to Gridiron Wrap, and let's take a look at the late window games, give you an update. The Lions were driving for the go-ahead points there inside the 30, maybe even the 20. And Jared Goff threw a pass down the seam, and there were more Bears around it than the one Lion. And as I will forever in a day remember, Jim Caldwell always preaching to the defense or to the offense, to both, tipped balls in the secondary get intercepted. They just do, and it did. So the Bears took over, thwarted the Lions' scoring drive. It's still 16-16. We're at the two-minute warning. The Bears have the ball on their 31 with, I think they've got quite a bit to go because Caleb Williams got called for intentional grounding on a play earlier. But we'll keep you up to speed on all that. In another game that locally I'm sure fans are going to be interested in simply because of one of the quarterbacks in the game, the Rams are putting the finishing touches on the Cardinals after Arizona actually led in the second half. But Matthew Stafford may have wrapped up the MVP award today with 4 touchdown passes, And the Rams are looking like they've locked up that fifth seed, leading 37-20 with 4 minutes to go in the game. And the Broncos, with one of the best defenses, them in Houston, I think, you know, pretty much are considered to be the two best defenses in the in the NFL. They're pitching at least a TD shutout against the Chargers, leading 16-3 in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes to go in the game. And the Patriots lead the Dolphins 38-1. Drake May, who often has been mentioned as a potential competition to Stafford, to Matthew for the MVP, had a very pedestrian day, one touchdown, I think, you know, threw less than 20 passes. So
yeah,
nothing significant there. And the Commanders and Eagles are tied at 17 with 3 minutes to go in the game. And the Commanders have the ball on the Philadelphia 1 yard line, third and goal. So
yeah,
that's shaping up for quite an ending as well as the Lions Bears.
And how could you not root for Josh Johnson? I mean, you talk about a guy, he's on his either 14th or 15th NFL team. I mean, this isn't even his first time in Washington, but he was actually at San Diego in 2004, which do you know who was the first year head coach at the University of San Diego in 2004?
Jim Harbaugh.
It was, yeah. He was with Jim Harbaugh his 3 years at San Diego, and now he's still in the league from Jim Harbaugh's first year now. So very cool. Would be kind of cool to see him be able to get a win. And, you know, I mean, you would say due to age, it might be his last game, but clearly not, because he keeps showing up in NFL history. So,
oh my gosh, it's incredible. And I'll admit something to you. I heard that they were going to start him this week. Okay. So I literally thought to myself, that's not the same Josh Johnson that played for the Lions or we had on the roster at one point. And it was, I mean, we had him on the roster. I don't think he played in the game for us, but it's just remarkable, his career. And, you know, he'll be appearing in some of those commercials, about rental cars or apartments or employment agencies. I don't know. But to be around as much as he's been around and on the precipice of a win today, as well, you know, hats off to a guy that obviously loves football and is showing it with his performance today and has shown it his entire career.
And he's probably a future coach as well, because to stick around the league that long as a backup, I mean, you can probably speak to this better, but you really have to be almost another coach in the quarterback room at that point, right? Helping break down the film and all that. So he probably has a bright coaching future ahead, and he's certainly learned under a lot of coaches and systems. So it might be a very good addition whenever he does decide to hang up his cleats.
No doubt. A couple other scores. I mentioned the Patriots game with Drake May. They're leading the Dolphins 38-10. And what appears to be more of a, I don't know, a baseball score maybe, or an odd score, the Raiders lead the Chiefs 11-9. Just 2 minutes and 23 seconds to go. The Raiders do have the ball in field goal range. So we'll see what happens there. Commanders did score, and they went ahead of the Eagles 24-17. And we have a stoppage in the Lions Bears game. It appears a Bears player has suffered what looks like a pretty significant injury. So we'll have good thoughts for whoever that is and see what happens there. And then in the nostalgia game, just the memory game of all memory games. The Bills continue to lead the Jets 35-8. I guess the only question is if the Jets were able to intercept any passes today, so they can avoid that dubious record. They haven't. Yeah,
they have not intercepted a pass today.
Yeah, isn't that something? Isn't that something? And then again, you know, it's not over with these games. A huge game tonight on WJR. the AFC Central, the perhaps the top rivalry in the AFC, the Steelers and the Ravens. It'll be at in Pittsburgh. I was going to say Heinz Field, but that's wrong. Acrisure Stadium.
Michigan but, Company.
You know, and it's a playoff game. That's the only way you can look at it, because the winner plays next week and the loser goes home.
Yeah, it's certainly a playoff game. I mean, it's also just so fun to watch all the time, because this is Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh's 40th meeting all time as head coaches against each other. So it's so interesting just to see the chess match that goes against each other. And it sounds like TJ Watt's expected to play for the Steelers tonight, which is always huge. I mean, there are many stats showing how much better the Steelers record is when he's in. He's recovering from a partially collapsed lung. I'm going to be interesting to see how much the Steelers run game can really get going tonight, because the Ravens are just one of these teams that they're just built for the cold weather. Derrick Henry, as we saw last week against the Panthers, just had one of the best performances in a long time by running back in a game, just totally dominated. Lamar is always a threat, obviously, and Tyler Huntley is as well. So I'm really excited to see. And then, you know, Rodgers, he also has the experience in these big games. So this should, it's always an instant classic when these two teams play, right? And like you said, this is pretty much round one of the playoffs for both teams. So I'm really excited for it. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the game?
Well, I think you made a good point about the Ravens being built for the game with that running attack. And I also think the Steelers will try to shorten the game by keeping Baltimore off the field. There could be some 8, 9, 10 minute drives in this game.
Yeah.
That, you know, what we've said, you know, forever, and it's been true forever, is there's two things that travel well: a running game and defense. And while the Ravens defense isn't what it used to be, the running game, at least in recent weeks, has shown itself to be pretty darn good. And, for all the line fans out there, somebody sprinkled some pixie dust on Soldier Field as the Lions are driving for what appears will be a attempt at a game-winning field goal. They have the ball at the 30 going in, 28, 27, 26 seconds to go. So we should have a final on that. When we come back after this break on Gridiron Wrap, you're listening to WJR 760, the great voice of the Great Lakes. The snap is good. The hold is good. And the kick is good. As time expires, the Lions with a 19-16 victory in Soldier Field over the dreaded Bears. So how about that, Alex?
Yeah, great way to end the season on a high note. Yeah. You know, I mean, no playoffs, but another winning record for Dan Campbell. That's what, four in a row now?
It's and you know what? We talked about it with the end of the Browns' last second field goal over the Bengals. The jubilation of this team, I mean, you can just feel it. You know, it's like they clinched a playoff berth. But good for them, good for the staff, good for the players, good for Bates making a game-winning clutch field goal. And you know, I said the snap is good, the hold is good. It's snap, hold, kick, baby. It's all three components that have to be precise in order for that to work. And it did. So, you know, hats off to the Lions. Here we go. You know, one more game tonight. Let's give a rundown if there's still time left on the other late window games, which there is. Broncos lead the Chargers 19-3 with just over 2 minutes to go. The Chiefs kick the field goal and now lead 12-11.
Yeah. Not my bad. 41. The kickoff on 63 yards. I was misreading the game.
Yeah.
Harrison Butker earning his paycheck today.
Yeah. I mean, boy, whenever the Chiefs and Raiders play, it takes me back to the 70s and some of those incredible rivalry games that often ended in brawls on the field. I mean, you know, the Chiefs with Lenny Dawson and Otis Taylor, and the Raiders with, Ben Davidson with the big, you know, curl mustache, handlebar mustache. I remember one game where I forget, it might have been Davidson actually, or Dawson had scrambled, and Ben Davidson came in with his helmet right in his back, and the thing erupted. But one of the great rivalries in sports, the Raiders and the Chiefs, and at least at this point, the Chiefs have the upper hand 12-11 over the Raiders. The Commanders are holding on to that lead against Philadelphia, and they also have the ball with a little over a minute to go. The Commanders are winning 24-17. So it looks like they're in control of that game. And as we mentioned earlier, the farewell game in Buffalo, the Bills, it's a final now. Buffalo wins 35-8. What a you know, stadium full of memories for all those fans. And now the Bills are on to the playoffs. There is an outside, a real outside chance they could play a playoff game there, but they would have to play a lower seed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like that would be the case this year. I mentioned the Patriots won 38-10 over Miami. The Rams and Matthew Stafford with four touchdown passes defeat the Cards 37-20. And the big game tonight, the Ravens and the Steelers on the north side of Pittsburgh, and for all the marbles. So what are your thoughts? Any additional thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm just really interested to see is, well, I want to see how healthy TJ Watt is, because that was such an unusual injury with a partially collapsed lung due to some dry needling technique or whatever. And then the other thing is just this Ravens defense. They started the year super banged up, and they just weren't really playing to the standard we're used seeing out of the Ravens. So I want to see if they're fully healthy going into the playoffs and if they're peaking at the right time. They seem to do a pretty good job in Green Bay last week. Those are the big things. And then again, just what's the Steelers' response to Derrick Henry? I mean, Cam Hayward, you talk about one of these ageless wonders in the NFL. He's been having a great game. I believe he's PFF's top graded defensive tackle on the season, actually.
Wow.
At the age of 36. Something. Yeah. And I know he's going to be playing extra hard, because he, if you remember, he had kind of a mini holdout in training camp earlier this year.
Yeah.
And the Steelers, all his incentives are just team playoff wins as well. So he's, you know, a veteran presence might really help rally the troops. So that'll be something I'm interested in. But yeah, this is just a game when you see Tomlin and Harbaugh meet up like this. Just every little thing matters. The game of inches, the special teams. I mean, John Harbaugh's a special teams guy. And then you got Smith over there, and
Danny Smith,
you know, two of the best special teams coordinators in the game. So I'm just excited. It's going to be a great joy. Sunday Night Football is one of the best broadcast productions in all sports, and it's one of the reasons why you love the sport so much, and these are the games you wait for.
Yeah, and obviously the NFL did it right again with the ability to flex schedule games the last few weeks of the season, and to have the Steelers and the Ravens for the final regular season game. It's compelling. It's essentially a playoff game, as we mentioned, and I'm sure it'll do a great rating. Hopefully the game itself, you know, lives up to the billing, if you will. So before we say goodnight, Alex, and we will have a show next week, just your thoughts on what's happened with Michigan and Michigan State, the coaching staffs, the portal, all that stuff, because they're working, man. I mean, this is the busiest time of the year in many respects for every college coach.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the Michigan. I think Kyle Whittingham's assembling a really good staff. They got Jason Beck, who is Utah's offensive coordinator, which Utah had a great offense this past year. And they do a great job kind of doing similar stylistically, really prioritizing running the ball. And then he brought over, he brought five coaches over from Utah with him. So pretty much the whole offensive staff, and then retained Tony Alford, who is our running backs coach, who I think is one of the best in college football. He's been coaching at either Notre Dame, Ohio State, or Michigan for the past 21 seasons, I believe, which just speaks to his talent. And then you saw how well Justice Haynes and Jordan Marshall are playing this year. And then also Savion Hyder, who is the number one running back recruit in the country last year, who averaged 18 and a half yards a carry in the senior high school season, is coming
crazy.
In. And I think, he's one of the best running backs coming out of high school in the last decade. Then on the defensive side, the ball, he brought in BYU's defensive coordinator, which they always have a good unit, kept Michigan's defensive line coach in Lou Esposito, and then brought over some other guys with him. So I think I think Whittingham's doing a very good job assembling the staff. And some of the guys, it's a nice blend of West Coast and Midwestern talent. Then over in East Lansing, I think Fitzgerald's doing a great job. I really like the hire of Nick Sheridan as offensive coordinator. I mean, he's familiar with the state. He played at Michigan, but he's been on staff with DeBoer the past few years. And then I, as much as I like that hire, I really like what he's doing with the defensive side of the ball. I think keeping Joe Rosie is a good idea. He's been really, he's been effective as Michigan State's defensive coordinator, and he seemed really fired up. The players seem to love him. So I think it's nice to have some continuity. And then Max Bulla, who's, you know, who was a star in the peak D'Antonio years when they made the Rose Bowl and all that. He's actually been kind of a rising star in the coaching ranks a little bit here. He's been at Notre Dame under Marcus Freeman the past few years, and he's been co-defensive coordinator and linebacker coach. He's going to be this upcoming year, so that's very good. Then on the transfer portal front, Michigan State, they've been kind of they've had a lot of players enter the portal. I believe they have something like 36 players in the portal or 36 on the roster. Either way, just kind of decimated. And then Michigan only has about 11 or so players in the portal, with some potentially coming back and just kind of testing the market. Others seem like they're leaving, but it seems like they're doing a pretty good job. But yeah, the portal is open for 12 more days here, I believe. And it is just a very chaotic time of the year. It's a very time to be glued to your phone and check everything out.
Yeah, the timing of the portal gets a lot of criticism with the playoffs still going on. So I imagine that'll be looked at a lot in the off season, depending on who's in charge of the NCAA football these days, because it seems to be, you know, a moving target from time to time. But that's our show for tonight. Our thanks to Alex and to Danny Cahalan, our producer extraordinaire, and of course, Skinny Boy.